The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Overcoming Addiction, Hope with Prevention, Intervention, and Treatment with Dr. Joe Terhar. On today's program, we will explore the concepts behind prevention, intervention, and treatment, as well as recovery options and innovations. Our program is a forum of factual research, personal experiences, and knowledgeable opinions. Now, here is your host, Dr. Joe Terhar.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's just wonderful to have you with me today. Thank you to the Health and Wellness Channel of Voice America. I have been so fortunate and blessed to work in addiction prevention, intervention, and treatment since 1978, having many experiences and learning from many people along the way. I'm here to share with you what I have, learn from you and your experience, and we together share in overcoming addiction with the hope of prevention, intervention, and treatment. Thanks to Las Vegas Recovery, our major sponsor, a national leader in addiction and chronic pain treatment. They are the answer for those with chronic pain and debilitating addiction. So let me tell you a short story here. 2 weeks ago, I was working with a family, and they're concerned about their 34-year-old daughter, and she has chronic pain. Well, after two car crashes about 15 years ago, she ended up with some pain, chronic pain. She's always, as an adult, through most of her adult life, she's used alcohol and marijuana periodically. She's been on, at times, heavy pain medication for the pain and some muscle relaxants, and she's on a medication called Klonopin, which reduces her anxiety. And she's twice been through outpatient treatment programs, drug treatment, because what would happen? Well, she would drink while she was on her pain meds or do pain meds while she was drinking or smoke some marijuana to stay calm, and she would fall apart. She's unable to hold a job. She was able to go to school, finish a community college program, but her relationships always fall apart. They end disastrously. And the reason is because she has not been able to grow in her capacity to deal with life, to deal with the challenges and the struggles of life. And in not being able to cope with the struggles, she gets buried in the emotional pain and the loneliness. But she also has these chronic pain conditions. And so she's continued to be on pain medication, hydrocodone and Klonopin for the anxiety, Cymbalta. She's tried a number of non-opioid pain management strategies, but she only tries them for a little while. She's used the TENS, which is an electrical stimulation, an external stimulation you put on your skin, and it causes a small current of electricity to stimulate those muscles, and that helps alleviate the pain. She's tried massage, which was very, very helpful for a little while. She's tried yoga, but one thing that was constant through most of her adult life is that intermittent between trying these non-opioid pain management strategies, she would be on increasing doses of the medications, the pain medication, whether it was hydrocodone or oxycodone. And while on these medications, she has not been able to grow, as I emphasized before. And so life keeps, you know, throwing her challenges, and she keeps succumbing to them and being overwhelmed. So she's had 3 hospitalizations psychiatrically. She would become, if she'd feel suicidal. She has developed some periods of abstinence from the drugs of abuse, the alcohol, and overusing her Klonopin, and overusing the alcohol, and overusing the pain medication. And like I said, she tried outpatient treatment twice. But what's happened? Well, here in the last couple of months, everything fell apart. So she ended up in the psychiatric hospital for her 3rd hospitalization. Because she has not been able to continue to grow and develop the capacity to cope. When you're on pain medication, the pain medication goes to the reward center of your brain. 80% of the effect of the pain medication, it goes to the reward center of your brain called the nucleus accumbens, and it stimulates pleasure. Goes to the pleasure part of your brain. The pleasure part of your brain, stimulating the pleasure part of your brain, 80% of it, and that does not manifest as wonderful, joyous pleasure, because what it's doing when you have chronic pain is it's trying to counteract, and it does effectively to a degree counteract, the physical pain. So, but unfortunately, what also happens is all of your mental acuity is compromised. When you are charging and invigorating the reward system so strongly, it wears out. And there's so much medication in the brain that then your other very delicate mental processes are compromised. So what a trap. You've got the physical pain. You're on anti-anxiety medication, which, as you know from my previous shows, actually chemically stuffs your anxiety deeper inside your brain. It doesn't make it disappear magically. That would be wonderful. It'd be wonderful. We would all walk around with anti-anxiety medication, but it doesn't magically make the anxiety disappear. What it does is it a positive allosteric modulator, a neurochemical mechanism, it stuffs the anxiety and it's deeper inside the cells. So what happens when you quit your anxiety medication? Boom! It all comes flying out. So she's on Klonopin for anxiety and of course, the anti-anxiety medication only mildly ameliorates that, because as you go through another day, another week, another month, another year of life, you have more anxiety. So since you're not learning how to cope with the anxiety, you have to take more anti-anxiety medication to chemically suppress your natural anxiety. Does it sound like a trap? Yes. So she has the trap of chronic pain. She has the trap of anxiety and not enough coping skills to hold a job or to even have relationships that are healthy, that are reciprocal, in which she can negotiate in effective ways. Well, what's going to happen to this poor gal? She going to, you know, just up the medications? Well, for years, that's what the doctors did. They upped the medications. Well, the answer, I think, is that I've recommended to she and her family that she go to Las Vegas Recovery. Why? Because while at Las Vegas Recovery, they're going to expose her, not one after the other, but during her period of stay, to 10 non-opioid pain management strategies. And she's going to learn how to effectively deal with her pain without the debilitating pain medication. They're going to help her comfortably get off of the anti-anxiety medication in a way that soothes that anxiety. And she's going to get to learn better coping capacities for how to manage her emotions in effective ways. So she's going to get the support for her pain, but in effective ways. She's going to get new coping strategies and new coping capabilities for her anxiety in a respectful and comfortable manner in which she has support. So no wonder we want her to get to Las Vegas Recovery. So this is why I recommend it. It's the only place I know of in the entire United States that provides the quality of care, the support to deal with the chronic pain. Now remember, I've mentioned this before, but I'm going to highlight it again. Chronic pain, Well, what we know is that short-acting opioids, the hydros, the oxys, they actually, for many people, we don't know how many yet, but they create chronic neuropathic pain. Doesn't it make sense that if you take a medication that alters the normal brain chemistry, that's going to throw the brain chemistry out of whack? Well, that's advantageous in the short term because that gives us pain relief. You're actually disrupting the normal brain chemistry. It's normal for you to feel pain when you have an injury. So when we take pain medication, it disrupts the normal brain chemistry to alleviate that pain. But we have increasing research from Johnson in 2009, from Watkins in 2009, from Bland in 2009, from Beardsley and Johnson in 2010, increasing research that shows that these short-acting pain medications cause, for many people, chronic neuropathic pain. And they do this by altering the chemistry of the glial cells, the cells that surround the neurons. And the neurons are the cells that conduct the pain message. So the glial cells that are wrapped around become inflamed with short-acting opioid pain medication. So this is why people are able to walk into Las Vegas recovery, gently and comfortably be taken off of these short-acting medications, given the support of 10 non-opioid pain management strategies, finding the combination that's working for him or her, he or she, and then walk out pain-free and drug-free. So remember that some people are susceptible to addiction on pain medication. We know this because of the research done by Dechenko in 2005. We can see the genetic pattern and how a particular genetic pattern, how that affects the COMT, which is a chemical name, and how that changes the chemical management of pain in the human body. And those people with that particular genetic pattern are vulnerable to addiction on pain medications. So yes, I see many people that they went for their wisdom teeth to be pulled, or they had a sports injury, they got on the short-acting pain medication, and boy, it took. They were never able to get off of it. So, for your chronic pain needs in which a pattern of drug use has occurred, please give a call to Las Vegas Recovery and tell them I sent you. Tell them I sent you. Because that won't make a difference in how they welcome you. They're going to welcome you. They're going to work with your relative. And they're going to help your relative get drug-free. So today what we're going to do is, just as I just got through doing, we've talked about genetics, the genetics of addiction and drug use many times before. But today we're really going to focus on it very critically. And yes, this is one of those shows that I hope my colleagues who teach chemical dependency studies across the United States assign this to your students, because we're going to have information about genetics that you can only get if you go reading through about, 80 medical journals, and we're going to make it available to those students right here, and chemical dependency counselors. Listen to this show once or twice. Recommend it to your colleagues, because you're going to get an incredible update on the genetics of addiction. So please give us a call with your questions at 866-472-5792 or drjoeradio@gmail.com. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hi, my name is Jolene. I'm a certified chemical dependency counselor, and I've worked with adolescents, adults, and families. I have personally seen how Dr. Joe explains the brain chemistry of drug use to users and their families. As the drug user and the family gains the information presented, the transformation begins, and it is actually visible. The connection is made between abstinence and recovery. In Dr. Joe's video, Why People Use Drugs and How to Help Them Quit, you get the full 2 hours of brain chemistry, and more importantly, the menu-driven 10 to 15-minute review of each drug. This video is ideal for individual and family counseling, family intervention preparation, and college classes.
Order your copy of Why People Use Drugs and How to Help Them Quit at www.silvertopvideo.com and click the Video Products button.
Are you or someone you love suffering from chronic pain? Are you tired of pain medications? Is there anxiety, stress, depression, anger, and fatigue due to chronic pain? We have a solution which will reclaim your life. Las Vegas Recovery Center offers an evidence-based, holistic inpatient program led by award-winning doctor Mel Pohl. Your life and your loved ones' lives will be restored, and the chain of chronic pain, pills, and medications will be broken. Call 888-538-3729 to get back your life.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Overcoming Addiction, Hope with Prevention, Intervention, and Treatment with Dr. Joe Terhar. To reach Dr. Joe or his guest today, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send us an email to drjoeradio@gmail.com. Now, back to Overcoming Addiction.
Welcome back. Welcome back. And don't forget, give us a call, 866-472-5792. I'd love to have you on the show, your questions, your comments. It's a joy to have my listeners participating. So today's topic, genetics and addiction. Well, let's talk about some examples of genetics and how they affect the human body, first of all. And, of course, I think the most salient example recently is what Angelina Jolie taught us during the summer. You remember the news about Angelina Jolie? She had a double radical mastectomy and reconstructive surgery. Not because she had breast cancer. No, she did not have breast cancer. She had those surgeries because she has the BRCA1 gene. And with that, an 87% chance of getting breast cancer. 87% chance. And of course, with that, there's the risk that she could die. She's got a husband. She's got kids. So she elected to double radical mastectomy and reconstructive surgery, all but completely eliminating the risk of breast cancer. It's genetic. I've told you about my very close friends. Went to a barbecue at their house last summer, and the mom had breast cancer, and that's how she found out that she had the BRCA1 gene. She has three wonderful daughters. Terry is the oldest. Terry was found to have the BRCA1 gene. Guess which one of the daughters also is the one of three who had breast cancer? Terry. And just like her mother, she had breast cancer in only one breast. But why did they remove two? Because she had the BRCA1 gene and the risk that the other breast would become cancerous and risk death. Genetics affect our bodies. I've mentioned before, my father had crossed eyes. I had crossed eyes. My first son has crossed eyes. Who we are physiologically originates with our genetics. So if you knew a child, another friend in elementary school that had diabetes, he or she did not get diabetes from eating too many candy bars. It's genetic at that age. Wilson's disease. Wilson's disease manifests in a number of psychiatric symptoms: apathy, anxiety, depression, promiscuity, and psychosis in severe cases. This is a genetic disorder. Wilson's disease is from the AT CP7B gene, and it manifests the symptoms between the ages of 6 and 20. This is a genetic disease that affects behavior, just like Huntington's disease. Huntington's disease, well, one of the most pronounced symptoms, the visual symptoms of Huntington's is the physical incoordination. But it progresses to depression and aggressive behavior and then ultimately death. I know a gal who's got Huntington's. Her father died of Huntington's, and notwithstanding other premature causes of death, she'll die from Huntington's. It's a genetic disease that manifests in a change in behavior. Addiction, for most people, is genetic. You expose yourself to a number of drugs, and the particular drug or combination of drugs that connects with your particular brain chemistry is the one that you're going to become dependent upon if you have that genetic pattern. Now, many counselors are still in the kind of the old approach of confronting denial. But research and the accumulated wisdom of many, many people who have survived their own addiction helps us understand the imperative, the necessity to stop using the drugs. Well, that's exactly what's most difficult to do because you feel better on the drugs. But the accumulated wisdom of many and research shows we have to help people get to abstinence. Abstinence. Let me read these names to you and see what they all have in common. Kurt Cobain, Amy Winehouse, Whitney Houston, Chris Farley, Elvis Presley, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Anna Nicole Smith, Heath Ledger, Thomas Kincaid, John Belushi, Corey Monteith, Corey Haim, Michael Jackson. What do they all have in common? They had drug problems, and they're all dead. Now, listen to the second list of names. See what they all have in common. Robin Williams, Eminem, Drew Barrymore, Liza Minnelli, Ben Affleck, Matthew Perry, Chuck Negron of Three Dog Night. And Chuck, if you're listening, I enjoyed the dinner that we had together about 7 years ago. You were an inspiration to me, and thank you for what you provided all of us that night at the dinner and to me personally. Britney Spears, Eric Clapton, Robert Downey Jr., Stephen King, Jamie Lee Curtis, Carrie Fisher, who was Princess Leia in the original Star Wars, Nikki Sixx, Macklemore, Jen Schwartz, Ann Richards, Kelly Osbourne. What do all these notable people have in common? Well, yes, they all have a history of addiction. What else do they have in common? They're all abstinent. Oh, by golly, there's one third thing they all have in common. They're still alive. You see the pattern? Those people who have a genetic predisposition for addiction, who use drugs, end up dead. Those people who have an addiction and who establish a pattern of abstinence and hang on to abstinence, they live happy, productive lives. So abstinence is necessary. Well, how do we help people work towards abstinence and get abstinent? Well, one of the things that helps is recognizing that many, if not most, and perhaps even all of these people have a genetic predisposition for addiction. Assisting drug users and their families in appreciating the genetic vulnerabilities and potential determination of addiction from genetics helps persuade many people to accept the necessity for abstinence. Just as in Harry Potter, the wizard did not choose the wand. The wand chose the wizard. And so it is with drugs. Frequently, when people experiment with a variety of drugs, what they're doing is providing their genetic pattern the opportunity to latch on to a particular drug or combination of drugs and provide and produce in you a craving that then you feel the need to fulfill. Just as the wand chose the wizard, the drug chooses the person through a genetic vulnerability in most cases. Well, let's take a look at just a couple of examples here. cocaine. Research by Alia Klein and colleagues in 2011 showed that this particular genotype, in which there was a low repeat MAOA allele. Now, that's technical language that you don't have to remember, but it just shows you that this is very specific. And they found that those people with that pattern had fewer neurons in the prefrontal cortex. Well, that's pretty significant, because the prefrontal cortex is where our decision-making, our consciousness, and the actual conscious decision-making process occurs. And those people with that pattern ended up with an addiction to cocaine, exacerbated by lifetime alcohol use. Well, okay, let's do this. All of my listening audience out there, the hundreds and tens of thousands of you across the United States, run to your doctor and get a genetic test. No can do. They're not available commercially. This is at the research level. All we have is the research showing these patterns, but these are not commercially available. So that's why our prevention efforts across the United States are so important. We want to prevent our kids from experimenting and being entertained by drugs. I met with a family last night. It's a wonderful family. They're such neat people. Two of the kids are in jail and prison. Another one, a young mother, is pregnant, and she's a mother to be, actively using methamphetamine. Holy mackerel! A pregnant woman using methamphetamine? You betcha. Essentially, 4 out of 5 kids have active addictions, and the father and his relatives had active addiction. It's genetic. Now, what are we going to do? Well, we're working our tails off for this family to pull together, because from an intervention point of view, here's the basic mathematics. The family has to pull together, work together, and in a profoundly loving and caring process that can be just as gentle, doesn't have to be abrupt. They're going to pull together as a family and help this gal get into treatment and take care of that baby. And thank goodness they reside in the state of Washington. Of all the people who do not have money for their own treatment, in the state of Washington, guess who gets to be at the front of the line? I almost cry every time I say this. Of all the people who need the state of Washington to pay for treatment because they have no money, who's at the front of the line? Women who are pregnant or recently postpartum. And that's the way it ought to be. We got to protect these young, vulnerable children. So what we know is that the role of genetics in addiction is extremely strong. And remember my wonderful, esteemed guest of a couple of weeks ago, Dr. Stuart Gitlow, who is the president of the American Society of Addiction Medicine. One of the first things out of his mouth was, it's genetic. He didn't qualify it and say, a percentage or a little bit or predominantly. He just said, it's a genetic disorder. And that's what ASAM, the physicians across the United States who are experts in addiction medicine, that's what the conclusion they've come to. It is genetic. And we don't have to prove that. We don't have to prove that for our intent and purpose today. We just know that people who have relatives who've suffered depression or addiction, they are extremely vulnerable. So when we get back from the other side of the break, let's take a look at other drugs and the known genetic patterns. And I'd love to hear from some of you. Was there addiction in your family tree? If so, give us a call. Do you come from a family where there's no known addiction? Good for you. Give us a call. 866-472-5792. See you on the other side of the break.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hi, my name is Jolene. I'm a certified chemical dependency counselor, and I've worked with adolescents, adults, and families. I have personally seen how Dr. Joe explains the brain chemistry of drug use to users and their families. As the drug user and the family gains the information presented, the transformation begins, and it is actually visible. The connection is made between abstinence and recovery. In Dr. Joe's video, Why People Use Drugs and How to Help Them Quit, you get the full 2 hours of brain chemistry, and more importantly, the menu-driven 10 to 15-minute review of each drug. This video is ideal for individual and family counseling, family intervention preparation, and college classes.
Order your copy of Why People Use Drugs and How to Help Them Quit at www.silvertopvideo.com and click the Video Products button.
Are you or someone you love suffering from chronic pain? Are you tired of pain medications? Is there anxiety, stress, depression, anger, and fatigue due to chronic pain? We have a solution which will reclaim your life. Las Vegas Recovery Center offers an evidence-based, holistic inpatient program led by award-winning doctor Mel Pohl. Your life and your loved ones' lives will be restored, and the chain of chronic pain, pills, and medications will be broken. Call 888-538-3729 to get back your life.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Overcoming Addiction, Hope with Prevention, Intervention, and Treatment with Dr. Joe Terhar. To reach Dr. Joe or his guest today, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send us an email to drjoeradio@gmail.com. Now, back to Overcoming Addiction.
Welcome back. And while I'm welcoming you back, that reminds me, I want to thank all of our listeners, from families to chemical dependency counselors. We know we've got a number of students in chemical dependency studies who are listening, to practitioners in other aspects of the healthcare profession, especially our psychiatrists and physicians who are listening. Remember, we had Dr. Jack from Louisiana call in last week. It's a pleasure to have. This is the radio show where people throughout the entire socioeconomic and educational spectrum can come together to talk about addiction, from physicians to psychiatrists, chemical, the whole gamut, because it is a compelling topic that we all need to have more information on. Well, that includes me. I learn on this show. I've been working addictions for 35 years, but I still learn tons new every day. So we're talking about addiction and genetics. And I talked about the example of cocaine. Well, let's talk about one of the most commonly used drugs in the United States, nicotine. Well, Freethy in 2009 and Sargentson in 2011 found that women with the 15q24 nicotinic acetylcholine receptor gene cluster. Again, folks, you don't have to remember that technical language. That's why we've got these researchers, these PhDs and MDs, to remember that. But what they found was that the women with that pattern in increasing numbers were unable to quit smoking when they were pregnant. Everybody knows it's not healthy to smoke nicotine, cigarettes. But especially we don't want women who are pregnant smoking, because we know it does cause harm to the child, to the fetus. And here's a genetic pattern that it makes it more difficult. Their brain chemistry for this genetic pattern is different for these women. Audrain and McGovern in 2011 found that the gene, the DRD2A1 gene, and when that was present in women who also were depressed, what they found was the first puff of a cigarette by a teen progressed to regular cigarette smoking and addiction. We are created equal in our rights, but we are not all created equal genetically. We each have genetic vulnerabilities, and some people are genetically vulnerable to drug addiction. Lin Xun Chen in 2012 found a genetic region, a region on a gene, that those people who had it, they became nicotine dependent. And it took them longer before they were able to quit smoking. One of the things that geneticists tell us is that this particular pattern is single nucleotide polymorphism, technical language, in some genes increases the risk of addiction. And 100 of those single nucleotide polymorphisms have been identified that distinguish those who are going to be able to quit from smoking and those who less often are able to quit smoking. Holy mackerel. It was shown that there are 26 patterns that respond better to the medication bupropione, Wellbutrin. Okay, prescribed to help people discontinue nicotine addiction, nicotine dependence. Well, we now know the genetic patterns, at least some of the genetic patterns, that are more amenable to quitting smoking when the person is using the medication bupropione. Now, there is research showing that there are people of African-American ancestry that have particular genetic patterns, that their body chemically absorbs 30% more nicotine than Caucasian genetic patterns. Holy mackerel, 30% more nicotine? No wonder that some of them, though there is a statistically a pattern of acquiring addiction to nicotine later, it is much stronger. Well, let's shift to alcohol. Are there alcoholic patterns or genetic patterns that result in addiction? And we'll talk about that in one moment. But let's check in with Cheryl from California. Cheryl, welcome to the show.
I recently got married, and my husband and I would like to start a family in the future.
Uh-huh.
But my father was a heavy drinker. He drank rather heavily when I was a child. So I assume he's addicted to alcohol. My greatest concern is that if I will also be addicted to alcohol, and if that should happen to me, what are my percent of overcoming alcohol addiction? Because this genetically runs in my family, and we never discussed that topic when I was a child. It was kind of like a secret. So can you give me some feedback on that?
You bet. And Sherry, thank you for calling. It's an excellent, excellent question. And we give a copy of Why Do People Use Drugs and How to Help Them Quit to the best caller of the day. And it doesn't matter how many people call in today, we're going to send one out to you and everybody else who calls, because this is such a compelling topic, and I so appreciate you calling in. So be sure you email to drjoeradio@gmail.com, your address, so we can get that out to you. And this information is in the video. That's why this is so helpful to chemical dependency educators and chemical dependency counselors working in treatment centers. What, are they going to lecture all this? No, just plug in the DVD from Dr. Joe. So to your question, Sherry, your father had what you presume to be a drinking problem. And so, yes, there is a genetic risk. Now, let's first recognize that a genetic risk is not 100%. Rarely, because of how genetics work, rarely does every offspring inherit the pattern that is problematic. This is why it's confusing for many people. Well, it can't be genetic because my brother isn't addicted. My sister's not addicted. Well, yeah, look at everybody's hair color. How many redheads? How many brunettes? How many blondes in the family? Did everyone come out of the womb and grow to be exactly the same height and appear exactly the same? No, there are genetic variations, so not everyone's going to get it. So the bad news, Sherry, is that yes, you absolutely have a genetic risk. I am so sorry, my good friend, that there's nowhere that you can go to get that tested. But you know that there is a risk. And so the more important aspect of this is, what do you do? Well, you be conscientious. And I know many people who have recognized the genetic vulnerability from their lineage, from their parents and grandparents, and they choose to not drink or not engage in any drug use. And you know what? They're doing just fine. They have a happy life. Again, there's no place that I know of that you can go and get genetically tested. This is why abstinence is very important. Now, that does not mean that every offspring of every person who has an addiction has to be abstinent. It's I think, in my personal view, it's wise. But use with extreme caution and prudence. Now, let's distinguish. Alcohol, in its capacity to cause addiction, causes also very little disruption when used in small amounts. But methamphetamine, you're not able to take just a little dose and get away with it. So methamphetamine and recreational use of opioid medication, those genetically vulnerable people are not only standing on the edge of the cliff, they're probably already falling over the cliff. For you, if you choose to drink alcohol, I recommend that you do with great caution and only in small amounts. And never try to keep up with the other people, because then you're trying to be socially in sync with other people who also may have a genetic vulnerability. Does this make sense, Sherry?
Yes, it does. Well, it certainly does.
Great. Thanks for the call. It was great to have you from California.
Thank you, Dr. Jill.
Yep. Bye-bye. So let's talk about alcohol. Yeah. I talked about the genetic patterns for the other drugs. Well, Heilig in 2009 found that the 118G gene variant had a different dopamine response. And the people who had that pattern, they had greater euphoria to alcohol. Well, don't you think that would predispose people to addiction? Larson, 2010, another genetic pattern. Now, let me talk about another pattern. I'm just going to get started on this one before the break, because this one is about serotonin. See, folks, there are so many genetic patterns for drug addiction. I can't even get to all of them in a one-hour radio show. So let's talk about one of my favorites, because it's very salient. It stands out. It occurs on the SLC6A4 area. And what it does is it causes a disruption in the transfer and transportation of serotonin. Serotonin, oh yeah, like antidepressant medication. That's right. Serotonin in the brain is a neurochemical that is very important in regulating appetite and sleep patterns and physiological functions. And with that, it also plays a major role in how you feel. So for this Christmas brunch, as a matter of fact, my family of four, my one son went to the chicken coop, got fresh hen eggs. Have you ever had fresh hen eggs? Well, the yolk is more reddish than yellow. And it's the dome is higher. He scrambled those up. They were delicious. My other son made a fruit salad. And he gently folded in raspberry yogurt so the apples and the bananas wouldn't brown. It was delicious. Now, what does this have to do with serotonin? I am going to leave you dying with curiosity. And I'm going to tell you the answer when we get back from our break. So stay tuned and find out what serotonin has to do with my family's Christmas morning brunch. Okay? Or not Christmas morning, excuse me, Thanksgiving morning brunch. We'll see you on the other side of the break. Hang in there. I'll be right back.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hi, my name is Jolene. I'm a certified chemical dependency counselor, and I've worked with adolescents, adults, and families. I have personally seen how Dr. Joe explains the brain chemistry of drug use to users and their families. As the drug user and the family gains the information presented, the transformation begins, and it is actually visible. The connection is made between abstinence and recovery. In Dr. Joe's video, Why People Use Drugs and How to Help Them Quit, you get the full 2 hours of brain chemistry And more importantly, the menu-driven 10 to 15-minute review of each drug. This video is ideal for individual and family counseling, family intervention preparation, and college classes.
Order your copy of Why People Use Drugs and How to Help Them Quit at www.silvertopvideo.com and click the Video Products button.
Are you or someone you love suffering from chronic pain? Are you tired of pain medications? Is there anxiety, stress, depression, anger, and fatigue due to chronic pain? We have a solution which will reclaim your life. Las Vegas Recovery Center offers an evidence-based, holistic inpatient program led by award-winning doctor Mel Pohl. Your life and your loved ones' lives will be restored, and the chain of chronic pain, pills, and medications will be broken. Call 888-538-3729 to get back your life.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Overcoming Addiction, Hope with Prevention, Intervention, and Treatment with Dr. Joe Terhar. To reach Dr. Joe or his guest today, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send us an email to drjoeradio@gmail.com. Now, back to Overcoming Addiction.
Welcome back. We're talking about genetics and addiction. And I'm given numbers and locations on genes. Why am I doing and the names of researchers and authors? Why am I doing this? Because I want to help all of you understand this is real. This isn't science fiction. It's real. There's tons of research that show the actual genetic patterns. Unfortunately, these are not available for us as consumers, but they're real. And they highlight the imperative that we continue to focus on prevention of drug use for recreational purposes outside of medical use. And it helps us understand the vulnerability. Now, why is this so important from the treatment point of view? I cannot tell you. It would take me 10 hours to tell you even a fraction of the stories of the families I work with. And again, I provide family-centered addiction recovery. I work with a whole family. Like, for example, just yesterday I had a family come in. I met the family last week, and then the drug user came last night. And what happened? Well, we shared with him the love and the caring. It was not an ambush intervention. And he agreed. He's got to become abstinent. In fact, he shared with us he's already become abstinent. We have to have the family involved. And when I shared with him the genetics of his drug, and then we looked through the genetic patterns in his family of origin, he better understood. He was a sitting duck. You cannot outrun your genetics. It was in and of itself an intervention. I know that many of my listeners are intervention specialists. We've had many intervention specialists across the United States buy the DVD, Why People Use Drugs. Why? Because they can plug that in with a family and see the impact of that drug use on the brain and the trap. You can see the trap visually. And it also emphasizes the genetic vulnerability. That's why this information is so important. That's why I'm sharing it with you on the radio show today. So what does my family's holiday brunch have to do with serotonin? Well, my one son scrambles those farm fresh eggs that look different. They're more red. My other son makes a delicious fruit salad. He blends in usually some raspberry yogurt so the bananas and the apples don't brown. I usually cut a 4-H ham. A farm-raised ham. It's delicious and juicy. And then I make sourdough coffee cake. I soak the raisins in milk ahead of time, make them nice and soft. And then I cheat. I throw in about a quarter cup of chocolate chips. We have this wonderful feast. Imagine my family, all of us working together in a small kitchen and then sitting down and having this wonderful feast, the family of us four. And that sense of contentment and love and serenity, that's serenity, folks, right there. Notice how serenity sounds just like serotonin. Well, that's not coincidental. my family concluding our brunch and sitting there with that contentment, that is what serotonin, that's the emotion that serotonin provides in the human brain. Well, people with the SLC6A4 genetic pattern, their serotonin gets knocked out of whack with alcohol. The normal person having one drink or two drinks of alcohol, their serotonin level will rise just slightly and then come back to baseline. The people with the SLC6A4 pattern, their serotonin blips, jumps up, not sky high when they drink, but it blips up. And what do they say? Quote unquote, and you in the profession, you've heard this a million times. I know you counselors, you CD counselors have heard this a million times. I feel normal. When I've had a couple of drinks, I can relax and feel normal. Well, why? Why? Because that person is giving you personal testimony that their serotonin level is now properly adjusted or adjusted at a comfortable level, probably from an SLC6A4 genetic anomaly. The problem is that the next morning, that serotonin level drops through the basement, drops down. So for the next, we don't know how long, the research hasn't guided us yet, perhaps week, 3 weeks, subjectively I say up to a month. For the next month, that person's serotonin level is slowly recuperating. But why wait? Why not just go out and have a couple more brews or a couple glasses of wine with dinner, man? Enjoy, relax, drink, have a couple of drinks. Well, what if that's what the alcoholic does? And because of the transporter anomaly, the person ends up drinking more. Why? Because he or she does not have complete control. And that's what Dr. Stu Gitlow and I talked about in one of our early shows. So this is why the genetics make such a difference. When a person with one of these genetic patterns uses a drug, so often what happens is the brain chemistry does not respond as it does with everyone else, and there's a drop. There's an accentuated sense of pleasure, or there's correspondingly a drop in the sense of contentment or pleasure afterwards. And that sets up the craving. And that's what addiction is about. Addiction is when any person who has less than complete control. So if I have 99.9% control of my drug use, great. Higher than I ever got on any of my doctoral class tests. But what does that mean? I don't have complete control. And what we know is from research is people who do not have complete control, over the years, their control is going to diminish. Let me talk about one more pattern. Now, this one is actually protective of addiction. This is what we know from DeWitt's research of 2006. What she found was that those people with the 9-repeat genetic pattern variant of the DAT1 showed that when they used methamphetamine, they did not have the incredible mind-blowing euphoria. Well, that's interesting. So that means that there are some people with this genetic pattern, the 9-repeats pattern, when those people use methamphetamine, they don't get the massive euphoria. Why spend the money? Because that's what it does. Well, the reason why these people sometimes spend the money is because it clarifies their thinking. It helps them focus. And we know that these people also have an extremely high incidence of either confirmed or suspected ADD and ADHD. The genetic pattern, the 9-repeats pattern, are people who have an extreme form of, at least for some of them, they have what manifests as an extreme form of ADD and ADHD. And to manage, they need an extremely powerful amphetamine-type drug. And with that, they're able to manage. I've got a gal who I did a 2-year follow-up with her just a while ago. She's on a medication called Dazoxin that is, well, one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful, stimulant known to mankind. But when you see her on it, she's calm, she's focused, she's at work every day, she's taking care of those 2 children, she has a loving husband, she's focused and is able to do very technical work. She's not up all night, you know, dancing and wigging out. It balances her brain chemistry in a healthy way. So check that out. Those of you who are CD educators, those of you who are CD professionals, psychiatrists, psychologists, go to the web, go online and look up the 9 repeat pattern and read about DeWitt's research, please, because there are people walking in your office who are using methamphetamine, for example, and they may need a different recovery regimen given their particular genetic pattern. So, by gosh, as I was afraid, folks, here we are. We're coming up on the end of the show, and I'm not even halfway through the list. I'm not even halfway through the list of all the genetic patterns that we have identified for addiction. Remember, it's like Harry Potter. The wizard does not choose the wand. The wand chooses the wizard. So, please, join us next week. We're going to have another compelling show. I want to thank Voice America. Obviously, Scott Duffy, executive producer, Jolene Ose, associate, and, of course, Jen Schwartz here in Spokane. Fantastic. The show wouldn't happen without her. But thanks to you listeners and thanks to Las Vegas Recovery. Help your relatives get there for effective pain recovery. We'll see you next week for another compelling show.
Thank you again for listening to Overcoming Addiction. Please join Dr. Joe again next Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Have a good week.